You need something bigger than yourself to get up for in the morning. You need something greater than yourself to live for. You need something bigger than yourself that pulls you out of yourself to make you better than yourself. You're just not a big enough cause to live for. If you're the center of your universe, if you are the idol of your life, if it's all about me, it's not going to work.
Well, some of you may recognize that voice, but most of you have read the book, The Purpose-Driven Life, by pastor and author Rick Warren. And I'm thrilled to launch into a new series featuring Rick Warren here on the Pathway to Purpose podcast. I'm Ken Powell, your host, and we just wrapped up a series from Tony Evans entitled, Does Your Business Reflect God's Glory? That was episodes 51 through 53. And now we're going to hear Rick provide a clear understanding of the three biggest challenges that you can overcome to bring God much glory, or that could become tremendous tripping points for you and your ability to declare the goodness of God through your business. It is our prayer that these podcast episodes will serve your journey toward greater influence for Christ's kingdom objectives. So here's Rick to help us apply God's purpose in our lives as business leaders.
You were made by God and for God, and until you understand that, life will never make sense. Now, God's love for you is unconditional. It's not based on who you are. It's based on who He is. God's love for you is not based on what you do. It's based on what Jesus Christ did for you on the cross. You can't make God stop loving you. You can try, but you'll fail. I've tried many times. You can't make God stop loving you because His love is not based on who you are or what you do. It's based on who He is and what He says. God is love. Until you understand that, you're going to always be trying to find your identity in other things, in your work, in your success, in your status, in your salary. And you're going to be on a frantic search throughout your life trying to make yourself lovable when you already are. You already are. And if you could just relax and accept God's love in your life, life would get a whole lot sweeter, a whole lot easier, a whole lot less stressful. When I was 25 years old, God called me to leave Texas, move to Southern California, to a town I'd never seen, and start a new church. No money, no members, no building. I didn't know a single person in the area. Pulled off an off-ramp 4 o'clock in the afternoon, pulled into a real estate office, walked in. There was one guy in the office. His name was Don Dale. I said, "Hi, I'm Rick. I'm 25 years old. I'm here to start a new church. I have no members, no building, no money, no support, and I need a place to live." And he just started laughing. And he said, "Well, let's see what we can do. Where God guides, God provides." And to make a long story short, within a couple hours, we'd gotten his car. He took us over, showed us a condo. I said, "We'll take it." We had no money. We literally were going to sleep in the truck the first night we got there, a rented truck. We didn't even have money for a motel that night. And he got us the first month rent-free and nothing down. Who ever heard of that? We called the guy, says, "I think this guy's legit." And we moved in. As we were driving there, I said to Don, I said, "Don, do you go to church anywhere?" He goes, "No, I don't like church. I hate church." I said, "Great, you're my first member. I'm going to start a church for people who hate church. You're in." So we started a week later. Actually started with one member, my wife. I preached the first sermon. She said it was too long. It's been downhill ever since. She still says it's too long. In January, I will celebrate 40 years at Saddleback Church. And people say, "What's been most fulfilling to you?" Well, first, change lives. A few months back, I baptized our 50,000th new believer in Christ. 50,000. And that's a joy. And then we sent over 26,000 members all around the world to 197 countries. But one of the things that I'm most fulfilled by is that I wanted to create an environment in a church where anybody with any creativity could think up a ministry and go, let's go for it. People will be as creative as the structure allows them to be. Some leaders, some managers, some pastors are so afraid of wildfire, they run around stamping out every campfire that would warm the church or the organization up. People will be as creative as you allow them to be. So we created an environment at Saddleback Church where anybody could start a ministry. And now in 40 years, over 500 different ministries have been started out of Saddleback Church. I didn't think them up. I just created the situation where people go, why don't we do this? Ish, why not? Let's try it. Some of those ministries, about a dozen of them, are internationally known today, like Celebrate Recovery, Daniel Plan. Now, what I want to talk to you about tonight for just a few minutes, because I know I'm going to be interviewed, is what I call the traps of leadership. These are traps that anybody can fall into, any man, any woman. And there are three of them. There are three traps. The only thing we can say good about Satan is that he has no new ideas. He's entirely predictable. The same three temptations that he used on Adam and Eve in the garden are the same three temptations he used on Jesus in the desert, are the same three temptations he used on David and Moses and Abraham. And I could take you from Genesis to Revelation and show you these same three traps over and over and over. It's not rocket science, folks. You need to know what they are and you need to know the antidote. If you want the blessing of God in your life, if you want the power of God through your life, if you want the anointing of God on your life, you must build your life on three things: integrity, generosity, and humility. Integrity, generosity, and humility. Integrity, generosity, and humility. Why? Because they are the antidotes to the three great traps of leadership. As I said, Satan doesn't have any new temptations. For many years, I never understood what seemed to be a contradiction between John 3:16 and 1 John 3:16. Same guy wrote both. Now, you probably don't remember 1 John 2:16. 1 John 2:15, 16, 17 says this: love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, are not of God, but of the world. So in 1 John 2:15 and 16, he says, don't love the world. You're not to love the world. But the same guy as the guy who wrote John 3:16 says, God so loved the world. Well, which is it? Okay, which is it? If God loves the world, shouldn't I love the world? And yet says, God loved the world and I'm not to love the world. The difference is in the meaning of the word world. In John 3:16, it's talking about the people of the world. God so loved the people of the world. In 1 John 2:16, it's talking about the value system of the world. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, those three things, those are the three traps of leadership. It's not of God, not of the Father, but of the world. So what God is saying is we're supposed to love the people in the world and hate the value system. We're supposed to love the people in the world, even the people who don't love us, even our enemies. As a believer of Jesus Christ, I am not allowed to hate anyone. And by the way, neither are you. I'm not allowed to hate people I disagree with, people of a different political persuasion, people of a different lifestyle, people of a different religion. I am not allowed to hate anyone and call myself a follower of Jesus Christ. I am commanded, like Christ, to love everyone. Now, there's a difference between acceptance and approval. Jesus accepts everyone. He doesn't approve of everything we do. Jesus accepts me completely. He doesn't approve of everything I do. Jesus accepts you completely. He doesn't approve of everything you do. Big difference between acceptance and approval. But we are to love everyone, but we are to hate the value system. You know what the problem is as Christians? We get it exactly the opposite. We hate the people and love the value system. We are as materialistic as the rest of the world is. We are as interested in pleasure and hedonism as everybody else is. And we are just as interested in status and success as everybody else is. We love the value system and we hate the people. Wrong answer. About, 15, maybe 20 years ago, I made a list of young leaders that I thought I needed to pray for. It wasn't just young pastors. It was young business leaders, young organizational leaders, Christians. Because I knew that when I started Saddleback 40 years ago at 25, there were some older saints who were blocking and tackling for me. And they prayed for me. And they covered for me when I was getting a lot of criticism, when we were doing stuff that nobody had ever heard of, that everybody does today. But it was real new 40 years ago. And people going, well, just give the kid a chance. Rick, if he's wrong, he'll admit it. And if it doesn't work, he'll admit it. Just give him a kid a chance. And there were these guys blocked and tackled for me. One of them was one of my mentors. I've had 9 mentors in life. One of them was a guy called Billy Graham. I met him when I was 18. I started preaching when I was 16, and by the time I was 20, I'd preached 120 revivals on the West Coast. And Billy Graham heard about this young evangelist kid who was in high school preaching. And he took me under his wing for nearly 40-something years. And these guys prayed for me, and I thought, I need to be praying for the next generation. Are you doing that? Are you praying for anybody in the next generation? Next generation of Christian business leaders? So I made a list of young guys in ministry, in marketplace, in academia, wherever. And I began praying for these guys. I pulled that list out the other day, and about half the guys on that list are no longer walking with the Lord. They flamed out. They either flamed out morally, or they burned out emotionally, or they checked out financially, or their marriage fell apart, and they're nowhere to be found. They're on the sidelines, and that breaks my heart. More than that, it breaks the heart of God. See, I'm not really impressed with businesses or churches that explode overnight and grow from zero to whatever. I can show you how to grow anything. It's not that hard. What I'm interested in is, are you consistent for the long haul? We need you walking with Jesus for the rest of your life. We need you being a model of ministry through your marketplace, ministry through your business, ministry, business as ministry. We need you to be that model, not for 5 or 10 or 20 years, but 40 or 50. What matters is consistency. It's not how you start. It's consistency over the long haul. Life is not a 50-yard dash. It's a marathon. And it really doesn't even matter who comes in first. What matters is, do you finish? Do you finish the race? And we need you to finish. In order to finish, you need to know the 3 traps, and you need to know the 3 antidotes. Now, the 3 traps are, as I said, in 1 John chapter 2, 15 and 16. And it says, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life are not of the Father. The lust of the flesh is the temptation to feel. We think the lust of the flesh is sex. Oh yeah, it's sex, but it's a lot more than that. It could be food, it could be TV, it could be sports, it could be drugs, it could be porn. It could be anything that makes you feel good. It could be shopping. What makes you feel good? The lust of the flesh. The lust of the flesh is the temptation to feel. The lust of the eyes is the temptation to have. I see it and I want it. Lust of the flesh, the word for that is called hedonism. Hedonism. I live for pleasure. My sole goal in life is simply to be happy. If your number one goal in life is to be happy, then you're a hedonist. It means pleasure is the number one goal of your life. Pleasure should not be the number one goal of our lives. It's a benefit. Happiness comes from holiness. If you make happiness the goal, it's an elusive butterfly. You'll never have it. It'll fly out of your reach all the time. Happiness should never be the goal of your life. It's the byproduct of being a holy person and a healthy person. You know, the word wholeness and health and holiness all come from the same root word. So lust of the flesh is really the temptation to feel. I'm going to put my feelings, whatever feels good, that's what I'm going to do. If it feels good, do it. We've got a whole society built on the lust of the flesh. If it feels good, do it. The lust of the eyes is materialism. I see it and I want it. We're moving into the season every year where I call Satan's greatest tools arrive in your mailbox. They're called Christmas catalogs. One year, I counted them up. I actually decided to save them for you. It was a stack about that high. I had over 75 pounds of Christmas catalogs. And you know, when I look through that stuff, I go, wow, I really need that. I didn't even know I needed it until I saw it. That's the lust of the eyes. I see it and I want it. That's greed. That's materialism. It's the temptation to have. And the pride of life is the temptation to be. I don't just want to be loved. I want to be worshiped. I want to be popular. I want to be envied. I want people to envy me because I want to be better than everybody else. I want to walk into a room and feel like I'm better than everybody else. That's the pride of life. It's the temptation to be. It's ego. It's status. So what we've got here is sex, salary, and status. It's called the American dream. It's also called the three greatest traps. Or it is passions of life, possessions of life, and the positions of life. Now, as I said, I could take you, if we had a couple hours, I'd take you on a Bible study through the entire Bible and show you how every single leader in history has had to deal with these three. Go back to Genesis where Adam and Eve, it says, the tree was pleasing to the eye. That's the lust of the eyes. I see it and I want it. The fruit was pleasing to the eyes. And then it said, it tasted good. That's the lust of the flesh. This is delicious. This is great. And then Satan said, and when you eat this fruit that God has said, don't eat, he didn't say you're going to be like me. He said, you're going to be a God. You'll be God. That's the pride of life. The truth is, we all want to be God. I want to be God. You want to be God. I want to be the God of my own little kingdom, the kingdom of me. So let's take a selfie. The kingdom of me. I'm thinking about doing a sermon called Death to Selfie. If you're the king of your kingdom, you got a pretty dinky kingdom. You need something bigger than yourself to get up for in the morning. You need something greater than yourself to live for. You need something bigger than yourself that pulls you out of yourself to make you better than yourself. You're just not a big enough cause to live for. If you're the center of your universe, if you are the idol of your life, if it's all about me, it's not going to work. When I wrote Purpose Driven Life and the first line became pretty well known, it's not about you. It's not about you. Somebody wrote it, called it the Forward March. It's not about you. You know, when I wrote that, some days I wish I hadn't written it, because I had no idea how many times I would be tested on that principle the rest of my life. Sometimes I think I'm tested 40, 50 times a day on, who's it about, Rick? And when people criticize me, I have to say, it's not about you. And when people praise me, it's not about you. And when people ignore me, it's not about you. And when people fawn over me, it's not about you. I have to tell myself that over and over and over. I was not built for myself. You were not built for yourself. You think God put you on earth to live a self-centered life? You think God put you on earth to live for you? No. You were made by God and for God. And until you understand that, life will never make sense. Life will never make sense until you realize life's not about you. It's not about your dreams. It's not about your vision. It's not about your goals. It's not about your kingdom. It's not about your bank account. It's not about you. You were put here for a much bigger purpose.
You were made by God and for God, and your life will make so much more sense when you apply that basic principle in all arenas, especially in your business practice. And here at FCCI, we are committed to coming alongside Christian business owners and leaders to inspire and equip transformational leadership activity that will advance the kingdom through business. And we would be thrilled if you would join us September 15th through 18th in Lake Tahoe as we come together to encourage one another along those lines. You'll gain tremendous kingdom insights from speakers such as Donald Miller, Jordan Rayner, Richard Blackaby, Crawford Loritz, and others. You can learn more at conference.fcci.org. Hey, thanks for listening, and may you be encouraged in your desire to lead a company for Christ.